Today is Friday, June 25th, and you are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedo for broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, U.S. to maintain security presence in Afghanistan amid pullout.
But insiders say some 650 will stay behind to provide security for diplomats.
Plus, hunger ravages women and children in Madagascar.
Acute malnutrition has almost doubled in just the last 4 months. Children are orphaned and running out of food.
Also, astronauts make power moves outside International Space Station. Our top story today is in Afghanistan. U.S. government officials say 650 U.S. troops are expected to be kept in Afghanistan to provide security for American diplomatic presence after the Pentagon completes its military withdrawal, which is said to be largely done in the next 2 weeks. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
The withdrawal of some 4,000 troops is already underway and expected to ramp up in the next couple of weeks, with most personnel and command staff out by July 4th. But insiders say some 650 will stay behind to provide security for diplomats. And about 300 other U.S. personnel will guard the Kabul airport until Turkish forces are able to take over there.
That's AP correspondent Jackie Quinn. Ahead of hosting Afghanistan's leaders at the White House today, President Biden is vowing America will not abandon Afghans who help the U.S. military. AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
As America's longest war reaches its final months, the Biden administration's under growing pressure to evacuate thousands of Afghans who served as interpreters or helped military operations the past two decades.
Those who helped us are not going to be left behind.
The president says the process of relocating them has begun, though he says he doesn't know where the Afghans and their families will be sent as they await U.S. visas. Meantime, officials tell the AP roughly 650 American troops are expected to stay in Afghanistan to protect diplomats after the main military force finishes its withdrawal, which will be largely done in the next 2 weeks. Sagar Magani, Washington.
The White House reportedly began preparations this week to move thousands of Afghans who aided U.S. troops to an interim third country while they wait to apply for special immigration visas. The move comes amid bipartisan criticism from lawmakers who say the United States is not fulfilling a promise to protect Afghan partners who provided support during the nearly two-decade conflict. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Jepson has more.
As the U.S. hits the 50% mark of troop withdrawal from Afghanistan,
Mr. President, any concern about reports that you're...
Afghan President Ashraf Ghani is in Washington meeting with U.S. lawmakers Thursday, ahead of his Friday White House meeting with President Joe Biden to discuss the U.S.-Afghan relationship moving forward. Republican Representative Michael McCaul.
He'll probably make a request for more assistance. And we'll have to hear what his ask is of the United States. But the commander-in-chief has made the decision to pull our defense forces out. I assume we'll be talking about force protection at the embassy.
McCaul and other lawmakers are also calling on the Biden administration to protect the 18,000 Afghans who helped U.S. forces and are now waiting for visas to the United States. Republican Representative Adam Kinzinger.
There are thousands of people left that were told they would get an opportunity to come to the United States if they would put their lives and their families' lives on the line, not just their own. This is the right thing to do.
Processing of special immigrant visas takes an average of 800 days. As Taliban violence around Afghanistan in the wake of the U.S. withdrawal grows, Afghans are saying they will be targeted. Interpreter and protester Halal.
We have sacrificed for the U.S. forces in this really important mission for 22 years in Afghanistan. We requesting to the President Joe Biden, this is the right time that take care of us and our families because we have been faced with a really big risk in Afghanistan.
Those interpreters could be evacuated and accepted for temporary residency by the U.S. territory of Guam, Afghan war veteran Representative Jason Crow told VOA.
The Department of Defense and the U.S. military is ready. The State Department is ready. Guam is ready. We need the decision by the White House to say, let's do this.
But with less than 100 days until the U.S. withdrawal is complete, many lawmakers say it's not clear there is a single person in charge of the process. Democratic Representative Seth Mouton.
I certainly have not heard of any operational commander for making this happen. And at the end of the day, that's what we need. We need an operational plan and an operational person in charge to actually execute this evacuation.
The U.S. has set a September 11th withdrawal deadline from Afghanistan after nearly two decades of being engaged in conflict there. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
European Union leaders seeking a common stance towards Russia during talks in Brussels Thursday and Friday are instead divided over a French-German proposal to reset relations with Moscow, including a possible EU-Russia summit. Lisa Bryant has more for VOA from Paris.
Arriving in Brussels Thursday, Estonian Prime Minister Kaja Kallas made clear her misgivings about a summit with Moscow anytime soon.
We all agreed that Russia is a big threat. They are more aggressive. I wonder what has happened now, where this proposal comes, and I'm really, really keen to listen their argumentation, what has changed since last time. Because what we have seen, Russia only goes as far as we let them.
The monthly meeting of EU leaders also addresses a raft of other subjects, but the last-minute proposal by Berlin and Paris on resetting ties with Russia is taking center stage. Moscow says Russian President Vladimir Putin is for it. Ukraine's foreign minister describes it as dangerous. Eastern EU member states are also pushing back. Ivana DiCarlo is a Russia analyst at the Brussels-based European Policy Center.
Of course, the German-French proposal came as a surprise, so it might create some divisions within the European Council. Some Central and Eastern European countries will consider this as a reward for Putin in a time where there are no positive signals from Russia.
France and Germany say they want to use the stick of economic sanctions when merited, but also engage with Moscow following what Brussels describes as a negative spiral in EU-Russia relations. Backdropping their proposal is last week's summit between U.S. President Joe Biden and Putin in Geneva, but also this week's disputed warship confrontation between Russia and former EU member Britain.
Nous assumons d'avoir un dialogue pour défendre nos intérêts en tant qu'Européens.
French President Emmanuel Macron says dialogue with Russia is necessary to defend European interests and stability. But he insists the EU will not cede anything that threatens the bloc. European leaders also will discuss Turkey, with reports Brussels will announce several billion dollars in refugee aid and border control for Ankara. Rights groups criticize efforts to deter migrants from coming to Europe. European Policy Center senior analyst Amanda Paul says many in Turkey believe Europe isn't doing enough. For VOA, this is Lisa Bryant in Paris.
Australia has promised to, quote, vigorously defend, unquote, itself after China appealed to the World Trade Organization over duties on wind towers, stainless steel, sinks, and railway wheels. The move is the latest episode in a worsening trade dispute between the Asian Pacific partners. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
China has lodged a World Trade Organization complaint accusing Australia of anti-competitive behavior. It's unhappy about duties imposed by Australia, totaling 10.9% on wind towers, 17.4% on railway wheels, and up to 60.2% on stainless steel sinks from China. The levies were introduced between 2014 and 2019. A Chinese Commerce Ministry spokesman said he hoped Australia could take concrete measures to rectify its wrongdoings and bring the two nations' trade ties back to normal as soon as possible. Relations, though, are far from cordial. Differences over Beijing's military ambitions in the South China Sea and anger at Australia's call last year for an independent inquiry into the origins of the new coronavirus that was first detected in China, have sent relations tumbling. China also warned its citizens and students not to travel to Australia because of racism fueled by the pandemic. Political disputes have been followed by an escalating trade conflict. Australia recently referred China to the WTO over duties imposed on its barley and wine exports in November. Beijing has responded by lodging its objection to the WTO over the tariffs on railway wheels and other goods. Australian Finance Minister Simon Birmingham told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation Friday that the complaint was petty. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Two leading U.S. senators have called on President Joe Biden to use powers under a bill they authored to impose sanctions on those responsible for forcing the closure of Hong Kong's Apple Daily newspaper, suggesting foreign banks were among those implicated. Gloria So of Reuters reports.
Two leading U.S. senators have called on President Joe Biden to punish those responsible for the shutdown of Hong Kong's Apple Daily newspaper. That comes as Hong Kong promoted security officials to top roles in government, a move critics say will tighten China's grip on the territory. Senators Pat Toomey and Chris Van Hollen say Biden should use the Hong Kong Autonomy Act passed last year, which requires sanctions on persons and entities that directly undermine Hong Kong's autonomy, and secondary sanctions on banks that do business with them. In their letter to Biden, Toomey and Van Hollen further suggested foreign banks could be implicated, referring to threats made by Hong Kong Security Secretary John Lee last month. Lee had threatened HSBC and Citibank with up to 7 years in jail for any financial dealings with Apple Daily owner Jimmy Lai. Lee also ordered the banks to freeze Jimmy Lai's accounts. The White House and State Department did not immediately respond to requests for comment. On Thursday, Biden called the Apple Daily's closure a sad day for media freedom and said it signaled intensifying repression by China. He vowed to maintain support for the people of Hong Kong without mentioning any plans for sanctions. Meanwhile, John Lee was promoted to Hong Kong's chief secretary position on Friday, second only to chief executive Carrie Lam, while police chief Chris Tang will take Lee's current position.
That's Gloria So of Reuters. This is the Voice of America. Taliban gains in northern Afghanistan have driven a worried government to resurrect militias with a track record of fomenting chaos and widespread killing. The region is the traditional stronghold of the country's minority ethnic groups that drove the Taliban from power nearly 20 years ago. European Union leaders have given a green light for plans to give Turkey billions of euros in coming years to continue providing assistance to Syrian refugees on its territory, but also to help the country boost border controls. UK regulators are investigating Google and Amazon over concerns the online giants aren't doing enough to stop fake reviews of products and services on their platforms. The Competition and Markets Authority said Friday it opened a formal investigation into whether the two companies broke UK consumer law by failing to protect shoppers.
This is Science in a Minute.
For over 30 years, scientists and lay people alike have appreciated the many amazing views the Hubble Space Telescope has provided of not only our solar system, but far into the universe to times shortly after the Big Bang. Unfortunately, the Space Telescope's main payload computer stopped working on June 13th. NASA tells VOA in an email that scientific observations can't be conducted without a functioning payload computer. They say that while the Hubble Telescope and science instruments remain healthy, they were put into a safe mode while scientists and engineers try to locate and remedy the computer problem. Despite several online articles that suggest the Hubble could be out of service permanently, the space agency assures that there are many available redundancies that have not yet been tried, and it's extremely likely that one of these will work. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chidi Adofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Communities in Madagascar are on the verge of starvation, with women and children walking for hours to reach food after the worst drought in four decades devastated the south of the island, the World Food Program said. Soraya Ali of Reuters reports.
Communities in Madagascar are on the verge of starvation. That's according to the World Food Programme, which says resources are scarce in the country after the worst drought in four decades. Acute malnutrition has almost doubled in just the last 4 months. Children are orphaned and running out of food. Their carer is also a mother of three.
I rely on God. Today we have absolutely nothing to eat except cactus leaves that we're trying to clean up. We have nothing left. Their mother is dead and my husband is dead. What do you want me to say? Our life is all about looking for cactus leaves again and again to survive.
David Beasley is WFP's executive director.
It's seven times worse than it was just a year ago. Seven times more children are in trouble. Why? Because of drought. We're facing the worst drought in over 40 years. And this is an area where people depend on their own agriculture, homegrown school meals, smallholder farmers. This is how they live down here. But with drought back to back to back, people can't survive. And so the government, partnering with the World Food Program and others, we're doing the best we can, but it's a terrible situation.
The WFP said more than a quarter of people are suffering in one area, and $78.6 million is needed to fight the crisis.
That's Soraya Ali of Reuters. A fatal attack by a gunman on the provincial office of Turkey's pro-Kurdish party is stoking fears of growing political violence against opposition parties. For VOA, Dorian Jones report from Istanbul.
Protesters in Istanbul hold photographs of Deniz Poyraz, shot to death in an attack at a provincial office of the pro-Kurdish HDP party. At protests around the country, people from across the political spectrum express their outrage over Poyraz's killing.
It is very alarming for all the people in the country. These provocative attacks instill fear for the future for every person living in the country. But against all these attacks, the workers and people have a word to say. We want to live in a free and democratic country.
The alleged gunman was taken into custody and, in a statement to police, accused the HDP of being terrorists. It's a charge repeatedly made by the government, who accuse the party of being linked to the outlaw PKK. Rhetoric which the HDP says is inciting violence against their party.
We know very well where such attacks come from, how they are administered, and how far they can go. We are talking about the coalition government that threatens our party, that targets our members.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan condemned Poyraz's killing 2 days after the attack. Human rights groups warn that Poyraz's slaying may not be the last if the leadership does not scale back its rhetoric. Mourners burying Poyraz hope she didn't die in vain and that she will be the last victim in the escalating political polarization and hateful speech. Dorian Jones for VOA News, Istanbul.
In a fusion of the modern and medieval, green laser beams and flaming torches light up the night sky in a remote part of the Israeli-occupied West Bank as Palestinians wage battle to stop a new Jewish settlement. Lauren Anthony of Reuters reports.
These night disruption protests south of Nablus aim to halt the rapid growth of a settler outpost called Givat Eviatar that began in early May. During demonstrations that began last week, burning tires have engulfed settler homes in acrid smoke. The Palestinians come with a clear message for the 53 Israeli families that live here. This is our land, not yours.
We are the night disrupting unit. Our aim is to dismantle the settlement now during the day. The unit for tires is usually situated in the other area, and at night we come and burn tires here, like you see, to send the settlers a message that they don't own any of this land. This is our fifth time here, not the first time. We've evicted them four times, and this is the fifth, and soon we'll push them into the trash bin of history.
The Israeli military says it faced hundreds of Palestinians threatening its troops. Palestinian officials say Israeli troops have shot dead five Palestinians during stone-throwing protests since the settlement was set up. Givat Eviatar resident Eli Shapira says the settlers will not be intimidated.
They won't drive us away from here because, again, we know this is our homeland, this is our forefathers' land,
And we know we love the land. We want to be here. We know they come out of hate. They hate us. They hate the land. They hate everything. Okay, fine. So if they want to hate, they won't stay here. They won't survive here. Anyone who comes out of hate, we come out of love.
Construction at Givat Eviatar is still ongoing. Families live there in caravans. Some roads are already paved, others are lined with electricity cables. The settlers named the outpost after Eviatar Borovsk, an Israeli stabbed to death in 2013 by a Palestinian at a nearby junction. It was set up without government authorization, which makes it illegal under Israeli law. That presents an early test for new Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett. Once a senior leader of the settler movement and the head of a far-right religious party, who now leads a coalition that spans both right and left.
That's Lauren Anthony of Reuters. Astronauts make power moves outside International Space Station. Northern Hemisphere sees its longest day of the year. Plus, do you ever get the feeling you have been watched? Details in This Week in Space from VOA's Arash Arabasadi.
This week, the Northern Hemisphere experienced the longest day of the year. The summer solstice is a phenomenon that happens not because of Earth's distance from the sun, but because of Earth's tilt toward the sun. NASA's Alex Young says that solar scientists welcome the annual lean.
Depending on the wavelength of light, we can see different features on the sun. We see huge structures in the solar atmosphere. We can see big explosions, things called solar flares or coronal mass ejections. And that's why we like to look at it in all these different wavelengths, because we get a much more complete picture of what's going on in the sun.
Young says studying the sun helps scientists understand solar phenomena that affect our lives, like solar winds and coronal mass ejections, which he calls huge burps of solar material. These burps can disturb communication networks on Earth while creating hazardous conditions for astronauts in space. NASA currently has two research craft flying close to the sun. Since ancient times, the summer solstice has been an annual highlight observed by British pagans and Druids. In other news, do you ever get the feeling you're being watched? For all the missions Earthlings have flown into space and the countless telescopes on our planet pointing up, scientists say there's a good chance the telescopes from other worlds are pointing back at us. Cornell University's Lisa Kaltenegger says there's little we can do to change our privacy settings.
Hiding is not really an option as long as you have oxygen in the atmosphere. So whether you send a signal or not, they will be clear that there's life on this planet if they have the same knowledge we do, right? And I assume, again, if you're worried about somebody coming and eating you, you're worried about a technological advanced civilization who could travel that distance.
Astronomers recently found stars in our galaxy where someone looking for Earth could find it. To do this, they reverse engineered a technique for stargazing to instead look back at our home planet. Astronomers calculated more than 1,700 stars in our neighborhood, and the hundreds of probable Earth-like planets around them have an unobstructed view of Earth. And while the late Stephen Hawking warned of making contact with aliens as they could harm us, Kaltenegger says she's not worried. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
One of the great rivalries in international soccer will be renewed on Tuesday at the European Championship when England plays Germany in the round of 16 at Wembley Stadium. The Germans lead with 15 victories, 13 losses and 4 draws. Their only meeting in a final came in 1966 when England won the World Cup by beating West Germany 4-2 in extra time. A disallowed goal at the 2010 World Cup that Frank Lampard thought he scored for England led to a goal line technology being introduced. Germany won that match in South Africa in the round of 16. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Paul Alexander, I am Chinua Adofo in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great weekend.
Her lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time,
with David Bandy.